Another page has been turned in my most recent read, and that means it's time for the latest episode of Being Bookish. This week, I am doing things a little bit differently. I have a guest with me, and we are talking Agatha Christie, an author that my friend Lorraine is not 100% familiar with, apart from maybe the TV shows. And just a little aside, so you know, whenever I say John Suchet, the news broadcaster, I really mean his brother David. It was one of those days. So on with the show. And as I said, this is my guest Lorraine, and we are talking Agatha Christie's The ABC Murders, which is one of the Hercule Poirot mysteries. And I honestly think this is slightly different to many of the other books that she wrote with him as the lead character. So I'm going to tell you what it's all about.
Let's us see, Mr. Clever Poirot, just how clever you can be. There's a serial killer on the loose, working his way through the alphabet, and the whole country is in a state of panic. A is for Mrs. Asher in Andover, B is for Betty Barnard in Bexhill, C is for Sir Carmichael Clarke in Churston. With each murder, the killer is getting more confident, but leaving a trail of deliberate clues to taunt the proud Hercule Poirot might just prove to be the first and fatal mistake.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. So, as always, we are not going to spoil this because I don't do spoilers, and I honestly think that, especially with a mystery, you need to keep certain things to yourself as a reader so other people can read it and enjoy it or not, as the case may be. This is your first Agatha Christie?
Yes, yes.
You had to think for a moment, didn't you?
Yes.
And when I suggested Agatha Christie, what did you think?
Well, I just kind of went with it because, you know, you always are quite accommodating and doing something more Stephen King-y. And yeah, so you picked a book.
Well, to be fair, I gave you a selection of books and you picked this one.
I did. It's my own fault.
Yeah, it's your, that doesn't sound positive. So as this is your first, mm-hmm. Hercule Poirot and Agatha Christie in general, mm-hmm. what did you think overall before we get into the intricacies of the plot without revealing who the murderer is?
Okay, so when I first started reading it, I kind of dramatically messaged you like a teenager saying how bored I was.
Yeah, you actually said, I don't know if I can read any more of this. Yeah. Does it get any better?
Yeah, I just
sorry.
I just found it quite boring. But I did kind of get into it, but I don't think I got into it the way other people got into it. I kind of found it quite funny.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing with Agatha Christie. She has this, especially with Poirot, he is kind of that, I know everything. And he can be kind of arrogant and sort of, you almost imagine him waddling about because he's not described anywhere as a very thin, poised gentleman. He is someone with a lot of pride in his appearance, but at the same time, there are certain moments, not specifically in this book, but in other books, where he is sent off, I think in Evil Under the Sun, for example, he is sent off on holiday on his doctor's advice because he needs to lose weight. Because his doctor acknowledges that he is not living the most healthy lifestyle, eating a lot of very rich foods, and he is told that he has to exercise, and he is quite unhappy about it. Speaking as someone who's told that quite often, how are you happy about it? Because I'm not.
Well, if you're not naturally into that kind of stuff, it'd be quite difficult.
Exactly. So he's quite portly. He knows his job. He knows people. And I think that is something that comes across very well.
Well, you see, the thing is, I kind of found him quite endearing and comical.
He's my favourite.
And I kind of, like, I remember the show, because it was, like, I think late 80s, definitely into the 90s.
It ran for, like, 14 years.
Oh, really? Did it?
Yes.
But I was never really into that type of thing, because I find him very hard to take seriously. So,
yeah.
But I did like him in the sense that he knows his stuff, but he doesn't, I felt personally, and I think that was because I was kind of comparing him to, is it Crome. Like, he was a bit like a, quite childish.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of had to be right, and he would say all these things that made me think, you know, he was trying to sound smart, but not doing a really good job.
Yeah.
Do you know that way? Whereas I think with, I just hate saying the name because I feel like I sound like a Muppet. But I think with him, he is good at his job, and he's confident at his job, but he doesn't need you all to know. And I think one scene I said to you, it was when I think he was chatting to either Megan or the niece, I can't remember. And they're going to the Bernard's home.
Yes.
And Crome's like, I'll go in and talk to the family. You just, and he's like, whatever, mate. And then he just has a little chat with Megan, but he stands back, but also while standing back, he does what he can and what he needs to do.
He gets,
so he's getting what he wants.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need to make a song and dance about it. Whereas with Crome, it's like, you know, it's like dick measuring for him. Whereas I don't feel like that's the case.
Yeah, I think the problem with Crome is he is one of Inspector Japp's.
Yeah.
Not, I wouldn't even say cronies. I'd go so far as to say he is one of Inspector Japp, who's worked with Poirot quite regularly by this point. Mm. He is he is part of the team investigating this series of murders that have taken place.
Yeah.
And he is out there to make his name because they've established, we've got a serial killer on our hands. We need to solve this crime before another victim is taken. And in order to do that, he wants to make everyone recognise that he is good at his job.
Yeah, but I feel like he's one of those people, and it's the type of people I just can't stand, is they're more interested in being right
than
whether it's the right thing. So it's like, it's not about, I need to solve these murders because someone's going around killing people and because, you know, oh my God, this person's been murdered. It's about, look at me. It's about him.
Oh, absolutely. And it absolutely is that. And quite often that is the way things are with Christie in general, because you've got, I think a perfect example of that is A Murder Is Announced or Death at the Vicarage, which are both Jane Marple mysteries.
Mm.
And the police are telling her to keep out of it. It's none of your business. And it's like, well, it's happening in my back garden. So I need, I can give you something. I've got this information, these things to offer you. And if you don't want to take them, that's down to you. But I've observed this.
Mm.
But I always thought, I can't help it, I always think of Jane Marple, Miss Marple, as my old neighbour when I was growing up called Doreen, who was a curtain twitcher.
I love a good curtain twitch.
She was a raging alcoholic as well, but I didn't know that as a child. All I knew was Doreen would be leaning behind her curtain. Yeah, I know. Would be sort of peering through her curtains or raising her her neck curtains a little bit to spy on everybody in the road and telling everyone, get off my lawn. She was one of those women. And that's all I remember her for, and that is how I always think of Miss Marple, which is why Poirot has always been my favourite. But he also seems to have the more exciting mysteries.
Yeah.
He's Death on the Nile, he's Murder on the Orient Express, and everything else. And those, to me, were far more exotic than Miss Marple sorting out a murder on the 450 from Paddington, for example.
Well, like, this in itself is a... I mean, like, if you're a police officer or a detective, or whatever, and you get this case, it's a juicy case. Let's face it. You've got a serial killer.
And as someone who likes true crime as well, I was about to say cozy crime
cat
then.
Hair.
sorry, my cat's molting.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, I obviously went probably down that route. So I am big into true crime. I've got a fascination with it. I'm interested in it. I'm not a fan. I hate that word for true crime.
It is a strange way to think,
but I do find it interesting. And when I was watching this, because apparently John Douglas and Robert Ressler, who were members of the BAU, you probably know John Douglas because of Mindhunter, they actually have I don't know if this is true, it's one of those things, but they've actually quoted Agatha Christie as something that they've, you know, kind of related to when it comes to profiling and stuff like that. And that's one thing I found with John Douglas. Whenever you see his work, he's very much, I will do whatever needs to be done to get the job right. And some of it is horrific, like the way he spoke to, if you ever want to Google it, the way he chatted to Richard Speck, who was a serial killer. And I feel like I feel like this guy's the same thing. And that's kind of what I meant when I said about Chrome. I feel like Chrome's like, look at me, I'm amazing. Whereas I feel like Poirot knows he's amazing and good at his job, and he's okay to make mistakes.
The funny thing is, quite often he isn't happy with the quiet and sitting in the background. He knows he is incredibly good at this. And though it doesn't come across in this, for which I'm quite grateful, because okay, it does give a different side to his character.
Okay.
In certain other books that I've read, and I've read quite a few that are Poirot, in fact, there are quite a few on the shelf behind me, it is, he is not arrogant, but he likes the fact that people recognise him as the wonderful, incredible...
He's a bit of a celebrity, isn't he?
He's a bit of a celebrity, and that is something that doesn't necessarily come across in the ABC murders, though.
No.
The person who is committing these crimes is bringing Hercule Poirot into it by actually sending him letters. It is far more this time, I've got to solve this, not because I'm being treated as the guy who has got to say, I solved this crime and look at me, I'm great. It's more, three people have died, I don't want any more people to die.
Yeah.
So in this instance, it's less about celebrity and reputation than it is, I need to solve this before anybody else dies. Whereas in other books, for example, I think Murder on the Orient Express is a great one. There is only one murder. It's a locked room mystery, so there are only a specific number of suspects.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, it's open because it's happened in three different locations. It is very, very different because he can sit there and go, right, I am the wonderful Hercule Poirot. I'm accusing you because you were there. And there's no other way it can have been done. You know? Yeah.
Well, yeah, because in this, it's like, the celebrity side of it I got was from when I think it was either the niece or Meghan. I do get them mixed up a lot. And
Lily is the niece.
Lily is it, yeah. And they're like, oh my God, you're the great, you know, and yes, that type of thing. We've heard so much about you and all that kind of stuff.
And Chrome is quite standoffish about that fact because
he doesn't like it.
He's resentful of the fact that he's getting the represent.
He just throws his toys out the pram, like, do you know what I mean? And he says things like, You find sometimes people speak with authority, you know, when he starts going on to like the psychological aspect of it and, you know, all this type of thing.
Yeah.
You're just like, mate, you know, you're not telling us anything new here. But he was speaking for the sake of speaking sometimes. And I was just like, you get back into your pram, mister. You know, he was a very irritating character. And I actually thought it was interesting because I didn't know this at the time. I was like, he reminds me of kind of a childish Ron Weasley. And then I found out that doesn't Rupert Grint play him in Malkovich version. So yeah, I couldn't take him seriously. I'm sorry.
I think it was because he was so arrogant in his behaviour was so arrogant. Whereas Poirot in this particular instance, sadly there were, though the book only mentions on the back, there were three murders. There was actually a fourth murder. Mm. Of someone who didn't quite fit the pattern.
The MO, yeah.
But it was by accident he didn't fit the pattern because he happened to sit in the wrong seat.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's that whole, I think, in this instance, Poirot is less, I haven't solved the murder, and more, I haven't prevented another murder from occurring, which gives you a new perspective on his character, which I actually quite liked.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I
think if you'd read any more of the books, you'd sit there and go, actually, yeah, that is different.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, because I find him quite a likeable, endearing character.
He is likeable.
Just wanted to get the job done, but was a bit of a, like, for instance, there's moments, where, like, the one character we haven't mentioned yet is Hastings.
Oh, yes.
I loved him, Colonel, because he was in that, he had that kind of friendship where he was like a complete piss taker and he was like winding him up, and a perfect example of that I loved was where they were packing to go somewhere and he's like, my God, the shirts, they're creased, and he wasn't folding them right. But the other fellow was like, didn't give a toss. And I liked that side of it. So I thought them two together, I kind of felt like I don't think he was the type of friend. And like you said, it's a bit different in other books. So, but this is the way I saw it from this, because I haven't read the other books. He, to me, was the type of friend where if Poirot kind of got up on his high horse, he'd bring him straight back down to earth.
I think the thing is, he's not in... Hastings isn't his companion in every single book. So he's not, for example, he's not in Murder on the Orient Express. He's not in Murder in Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
He is in...
God, I haven't seen Murder on the Orient Express in...
Donkeys.
Yeah.
You see that?
I didn't see the new one.
Yeah, you see, for me, my mum absolutely loathed the new ones. She likes Kenneth Branagh as an actor, but she doesn't like him as Poirot.
Okay.
So she won't watch the new ones. But every single Christmas, my mum and I will watch Death on the Nile, Murder on the Orient Express, and Evil Under the Sun with Peter Ustinov and Albert Finney. They are the epitome of, after the holiday, they are the epitome of our Christmas viewing every single year. I know those films back to front and upside down.
But I think with the Kenneth Branagh version, and I'll be honest with you, even thinking about this, whenever I, you know, because I've heard him speak and stuff like that, but it's very comical to me how he carries on, and I'm always expecting him to go like that from
Austin Powers.
Yes. And so, like, I found myself kind of like chuckling along, and it's almost like a bit of a funny story, and oops, somebody got killed, like, do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And there are certain books, I think, where that occurs, but there are also certain books where he's brought in after the murder has occurred. I mean, with Death on the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express, they are locked room mysteries. There is nobody, there's no way anybody could get off the train or the boat. There's no way that anybody could get on. Yeah. So all of the victims and the murderer, the suspects, are all in that set location.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's there with both of them. He is a passenger on the train and he's a passenger on the cruise, on the river cruise. So he's there from the start. Whereas with a lot of the mysteries, like this one where he sent the letter and he's too late to identify, too late to prevent the first murder from occurring. And with several others, he comes in afterwards because he's been asked to investigate it.
Mm.
So he's in demand. So there's the element of celebrity. And I love the difference that you see in the character when he is brought in from the start, or where he has actually witnessed certain events occurring, because you see the way his thought processes are.
Yeah.
And there are elements of him that are incredibly funny.
Yeah, because I can't remember the name of the character, and you might even tell me that it's him, but there's a line where some guy goes, I think there's been a murder. Like, is this...
If there was a, I think there's been a murder with that accent, that would be Poirot.
Well, maybe it is him, but like that, because I honestly, I can't remember anything about my experience with him when I was younger, because I haven't looked at anything since then, if I'm completely honest with you.
Yeah.
But there's one line that goes, I think there's been a murder. And that's, maybe that is him.
If it was that accent, then it was him. I think the one of the things I do love about the way that Christie writes him is he has such national pride in the fact that he is Belgian
and not
French. He will correct anybody. And the thing is, you start initially, you think, oh, that's just the TV show. Or the film.
Yeah, because I was like, it's French. It's not.
It is the book. All the way through, it is the book. He is Belgian.
Yeah. But for some reason, I thought, because when you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, the French guy.
No, he's not French. Comes from a similar place to where my grandmother came from.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that. But yeah, no, he's definitely not. He's definitely not French.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. I mean, I have to admit, this wasn't my favourite Agatha. This wasn't my favourite Hercule Poirot that I even read last month.
Yeah.
But I did still enjoy it, because I liked the dynamic of the characters. I think that there were certain things. You were talking about the Mindhunter stuff and the psychological aspects of it.
Oh, no, there was. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
With there are certain incidents during the book where you meet the relatives of the victims. So you meet the niece of Alice Asher, the first victim. You meet the parents and the sister of Betty Barnard. And then you meet the brother, the wife, who is weird as anything, and the assistant of Carmichael. And they are very... there is something about them that is incredibly appealing, because they are all... They are very, very different. They're all from different classes of life. It's not as though every single person's always upper class. As you think about the two books that I've already mentioned, they are, all of them are very wealthy, because they wouldn't be anything else if they could afford to be on the Orient Express or on a cruise on the Nile, especially during the sort of like 30s. But in this book, they are from all walks of life.
Mm.
And you have ABC in the ABC Murders, which is Mr. Cust. Or is it? That's a good question.
But yeah, I kept forgetting about him.
Which is quite unfortunate when he is actually the first person to appear in the book.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I just kind of... He wasn't a focus point for me, if I'm honest with you.
He was a very... I think the thing was, he was a very nondescript character.
Mm.
You knew what he looked like because you get a description of him. But even when you get that description, it's kind of like, you know that... the classic, oh, did you see the suspect? Yes, he had brown hair, brown eyes, and he was wearing a coat. Well, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you get with Mr. Cust.
Yeah.
You don't get anything more, and that's a charm of Agatha Christie.
Mm.
Because she's very good at creating these characters who almost blend into the background, and you kind of miss them until... a plot point jumps out and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But he was someone that I was like, oh God, I need to remember this guy. I don't know why. He just didn't. I think because like I liked to. So can we talk about the ones that... Are we allowed to talk about people that got killed?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It wouldn't be a cozy mystery without...
I know, but people. I never know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say.
You're not allowed to say who
She's
did
very
it.
Very controlling.
You're not allowed to say who did it. You're not allowed to say the motive.
Yeah.
Basically not the ending, you know?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. No, but with the killings, I like as well, that kind of got me into some interesting characters, like mainly with Lily and Megan.
Yeah.
And because there was, oh my God, the bit that kind of made me like struggle to take it seriously is when they use phrases like homicidal maniac and you've got to sort this out. It has to be stopped. This can't go on. And you're like, well, duh. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, yes. It's like, does she expect the policeman to go, you're right, we have to stop this. It can't go.
And
it
just, we're arresting that person. Yeah. Oh, look, he was guilty.
But when they use phrases like, it was a homicidal maniac on the loose, I'm just like.
But I think that was for the impact of getting you to go,
yeah.
Which probably people during this particular period would have done.
Mm.
I mean, this book came out originally in 1936.
Okay, so different times.
And I think that during those times, because that was between the two wars, very, very close to the start of the Second World War. So things were incredibly different. They just started to get back to a relative normality. Obviously, the powers were rising in Germany, but let's not go there anymore. And things were changing. Mm. But people had got this... They'd been grown accustomed to their way of life, and everything seemed copacetic. It was like everything's calm, and then all of a sudden, it's like three people have been killed, and they've all been killed in different ways.
Yeah,
in totally different locations. There's no connection between any of them apart from these letters that Poirot's getting. I mean, that's the thing. It was like, so why are they sending them to him?
Exactly, because they're like, you've got different genders, because you tend to have, when it comes to serial killers, they have something,
there's a similarity between them.
And they use the same method.
Yeah.
So you've got, the only thing is that ABC kind of calling card thing, and the fact, I know they're getting the letters, but like...
But the thing is, the ABC calling card is completely thrown out of whack when the last person is killed.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that doesn't fit the...
It doesn't fit the profile.
Every single person up until that point...
Did I just say that? Doesn't fit the profile.
Yes. You did.
I've been watching too much Criminal Minds.
Yes. Every single character has an alliteration as a name, though realistically, Betty Barnard was Elizabeth. However, the last person who's killed is Douglas.
George Earls?
Oh, it's George. It was supposed to be a Douglas.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a Douglas in Doncaster, and it ends up being a George Earlsfield in Doncaster.
Yeah.
So he doesn't fit the only profile they have. Is completely ruined, because the only profile they have is every single person is matching the first name and last name with the first letter of the place they're killed in.
So is it a copycat?
So is it a copycat? That see that that would be, but Agatha Christie doesn't really use that particular plot point.
No, but I know, but like in like you know if
but
you
that's
were
what
a
people
policeman
would think.
And you had like you know a certain profile or like a MO of the way that they killed.
Yeah. And that is what you would think.
Yeah,
it would
but
be...
the fact that they're doing, like, they're crossing genders and they're crossing the way they kill And then they throw a spanner in the works because, I mean, they don't know it was, you know, they picked the wrong person, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't know that.
But not only that, the only thing that they have to connect ABC with everything, and they start to piece things together, or rather Poirot starts to piece things together with the fact that two of the people were seen having purchased stockings.
Mm.
And the final person, I saw his assistant talking with a strange man on the doorstep.
Yeah.
But his wife was weird.
Mm.
His, unfortunately, Mr. Carmichael, the second to last victim, his wife was... I actually suspected her of doing it, if I'm honest.
Oh, really?
Because there was something about her that just didn't add up.
Mm.
Okay. She came across as incredibly suspicious, and I didn't like her. And I felt really bad for not liking her because she was ill, but she was also an absolute and utter witch with a B. Yeah, there's something about her that just didn't strike true.
Well with you? Okay. Okay.
I felt very, very sorry for his assistant.
Yeah, but wasn't he...
No.
Oh, he wasn't doing the dirty with her.
No, she said he treated me like a daughter.
Oh,
she was horrified. Absolutely.
They thought that they were...
She thought, his wife thought she was.
Yeah.
They thought that Carmichael was having a fling with his assistant, who came across as a lovely woman who really adored her employer. And she said, no, he treated me like a daughter.
But I suppose, to be fair, you know, it's kind of like a cliche, isn't it? Your husband's got an assistant or
who's
a receptionist
young
and pretty, and you're, you know,
yeah,
doing the deed. Like,
yeah, and she really assumed it, so she asked him to fire her.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, but that but then it's like we said, she was poorly and she was on medication, yeah, so she might not have been thinking.
The thing
really...
is, there were motives all over the place for every single murder, because Asher's white husband was abusive and violent, though he wasn't really. Then you've got Betty's boyfriend was massively possessive,
yeah,
and very... He didn't like it when he was jealous all the time. Mm. And then you've got the suspicion of, well, Carmichael's assistant's got a motive for murder,
mm-hmm,
because she's just been fired. So you've got all of these people, and there's so many red herrings, and that's what I like about it.
But I think for me, like, if I was, you know, the Mrs. Powell, I would, it wouldn't make, because it was in such a short space of time.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yeah, if it was just Alice, it would be so easy to pin it on her husband. If it was just Betty, it'd be so, you know, because obviously they always go straight for the partner.
That
don't
was
they?
The thing. I think that if the letters hadn't arrived, that is the way things would have gone.
Yeah, but see, I wouldn't have done that, because I would have been like, okay, like I said, if it was just Alice, you'd be like, okay, her fella flipped. Because obviously the first person they always look into is the partner. So...
Be warned.
Be warned. But if all these people are dying, mm-hmm, I'd be like, oh, hang on a second. They can't all be having marriage problems. They can't all be, you know, arguing with their partners. Like,
yes,
it just, it's too quick.
Yeah, the thing is, though, they're not massively quick. And there is the fact that they are in very, very different locations.
Yeah.
There is no connection between them. And they did have certain relationship issues.
Mm.
So they could have quite easily been, well, that was her husband, that was the boyfriend. Because the modus operandi was so different.
It was just... Sorry, I'm just turning my Bluetooth off because my watch keeps beeping and I don't know how to stop it. So, yeah, but I don't know. It would have been too much of a coincidence. Like, how are all these people dying? Like, it can't all be, like, you know...
Yeah, but I think that we'd think that now because of the connection with... We have far better communications. We have the internet and everything else. In 1936, would that have been the case?
But there are elements of when policemen sometimes want to solve a case, there have been cases where they've got the wrong person, and it's very easy to turn around and say to, you know, such and such, you did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
they frame the wrong person. That's exactly why it would have been very easy, given the fact that we know this was a framing.
Yeah.
Though we're not going to go into that in too much detail because that gives away loads. Yeah, exactly. Because that gives away loads, there was an element of I think there was a very, very clever element when it came to picking the victims.
Yeah.
Because, oh, that woman's got problems with her marriage. Yeah. That person's near that, so therefore they could have been a suspect. And if there is that connection, they're still going to shove the wrong person in the hangman's noose, essentially.
Yeah, and one of the things that is kind of sometimes a common trait with killers, serial killers, is that they inject themselves into the investigation. And we kind of had that because, like, Lily and Megan were in cahoots chatting to each other, and someone else, Franklin, he was chatting away, and then there was someone else. Was there another person that was chatting away?
There was the assistant.
The assistant was chatting away. So they were all kind of like making me think.
Yeah, Mary.
Yeah, Mary, yeah. So they were all kind of like asking questions, but sometimes...
And Thora. Thora was his assistant.
Yeah.
Mary was the niece. Megan yeah. was the sister. Yeah. Thora was the assistant. And Lily was the Lily. Daughter of... Cust's landlord.
Okay.
Cust's so, landlady.
Yeah, there were times when you're like, you know, why are you trying to get in this? Because if you're trying to like help.
Yeah.
Like there was a situation with like Ed Kemper where he used to go drink with the police and he was the killer and yeah. he was getting all the information. He was getting all the information because he was injecting himself into the investigation. Kind of just, he was a very intelligent guy. But that's kind of what they're doing. So, you know, I think that they needed to basically, these lot needed to go away and let the police just get on with it.
That's the thing, though. Poirot was, in a way, because he was brought into it by the police.
Yeah.
Because, and he was brought into it, to be fair, by the killer.
No, he should have been brought into it.
Yeah. Because he was brought into it. Yeah, he's yeah. not a policeman.
No, but
he's a private detective, yeah. but he retired.
Yeah.
He is, he was brought into it because he was sent the letters.
Yeah.
They were goading him into solving the murders.
Yeah.
They really were. I mean, they were like, you haven't solved this one. Are you going to prevent the next one?
Yeah.
It's going to happen on this day. And he was getting that information and he was sharing everything he knew with
yeah.
the police.
Yeah.
He wasn't going, oh, I'm not going to tell you anything because you haven't been helping me. He was very upfront and honest about it. And he is the one who brought the Legion in, which is what they called the people that helped him to investigate
yeah,
the murders.
But they shouldn't have been.
But that's the thing. I think that was the whole purpose, was to get them involved. And part of me thinks he wanted to find out more about all of these things, because there were so many secrets, especially with Megan and Betty.
Mm.
Because Megan was... Oh, my sister. You know the cliche of when somebody passes away.
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah. When someone passes away, you do have that thing where you say, you can't say anything bad about anyone. And you sit there and you go, oh, they were so lovely. It's such a shame it happened to someone.
Tell me what you really think now, Megan.
And Megan was very honest.
Yeah.
When she was taken aside and away from her family. And she was like...
Well, she was a...
She wasn't exactly the nicest person.
Yeah. Yeah.
She called it as she saw it, eventually. And that helped in the investigation.
Well, there was one person, and I'm not going to say who they are, because I don't want to give away
anything.
I was like, you're handing it to them on a plate, person.
Yes.
Because it was so over the top at times. I was just like, what are you doing? Like, you know, what? Just back up there, matey.
Think about what you're saying. Listen.
Yeah.
Before you say a word more, before you incriminate yourself, basically.
Yeah. It was like, I was just like, you're doing too much. You're saying too much. I don't know. It was.
But then I also think that to a degree, what's the name of the, there's a condition, isn't there, where people have to confess to something, even if they're not guilty, because they need
yeah.
the attention.
Yeah.
And that is what I think
certain
characters within this book actually suffered from.
Yeah, because some people
I think that there was an element of psychological investigation involved in this book.
Yeah, because as well, I suppose people just want the attention as well, don't they?
Yeah, and like, which is what I think happened with certain characters in this book, though I'm not going to give them away because that's not fair. So overall, did you enjoy the book after you got past the beginning where, so boring, is this going to get any better?
Do you know what? It's a fun story. I liked the dramatics of it, like when they use phrases like homicidal maniac, you know, things like that. It's just like, I'm just like, you know, you would never hear that today, even though it's probably warranted sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And it really is. Like, like I said, the little dramatic bits of, you need to find him and stop him now, you know, we can't be living like this type attitude.
Did you listen to part of it as an audiobook though, didn't you?
I've done a bit, yeah. So I read it first, and then on the way down, I thought I'd have a refresh, and I just listened to a bit of it as a refresh. So I got to, but when I was reading it, I mean, obviously, you know, like I said, if someone turned around and said homicidal maniac, you know, it's very dramatic.
Oh my God, that's massively dramatic.
And when people say stuff like, you need to find the person that did this, you need to stop the killing, it's like, oh, right, okay, well, thanks for clearing that up. You know. But when you hear it in the I was giggling away driving down listening to that, and I only listened to a bit of it. I only listened to like the first maybe five chapters in the car. And okay. I was just like, it made it even more funny because I pictured the homicidal maniac and I pictured the, you know, you need to find them. And then when I listened to it, I was like, that's exactly how I heard it.
Yeah, the thing
when
is,
I read it,
I do
when
think
I read it.
There are certain elements, especially in books like, I'm looking at my shelf now, I think not so much Sparkling Cyanide, but most certainly The Mirror Cracked from Side to Side.
Mm.
And that was made into a film with Angela Lansbury and Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, God.
Angela Lansbury was played Jane Marple,
mm-hmm.
and Elizabeth Taylor played the lead American actress.
Okay.
And that is supremely, thinking about the cast, that is supremely overdone and massively dramatic.
Yeah.
And I think that that is an element of Agatha Christie's books in general. Mm. I know that a lot of it is very well researched. She's an incredible writer, to be fair. It's very well researched and thought out. And she's not just going, oh, I'm just going to type a load of words and that's it.
No,
she does put
a lot
of care into what she's written.
Like, I think you said it last night when we were chatting, that you feel like the way she talks about this, especially the psychological aspect of it, like she was ahead of her time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I believe that.
I could see that. Like, it's very, you know, it's good writing. It's intelligent. Like, you can see, it's not just someone go, ooh, and they killed them. Battered them over the head, they did. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and, absolutely.
Yeah, it was. So yeah, no, I. What?
To batter them over the head, they did.
No, but that's what I mean. Is like, and I'm not slagging off the accent because I'm Somerset, okay? But yeah, it's. I kind of had to. I appreciated what it was, and I thought it was good,
but
I think simply because of the times we're in today and the kind of stuff I watch, remember I watch a lot more darker stuff. I think the way that they spoke was comical.
Yeah, but I wonder if it was...
simply because of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I do think that sometimes it is meant to be comical rather than actually focusing on... I mean, the book covers some serious topics because it does cover the subject of infidelity, domestic abuse,
addiction.
Addiction and all of these other things. It covers those things. Mm. So it's not just a case of it's twee and stupid.
Yeah.
It is talking about these
deeper substance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are some deeper subjects within this. But at the same time, I think that there are elements of humour. It's not like Halloween, I have to say, Halloween Party, which is another Hercule Poirot, which was made into The Haunting in Venice, which is based in Venice and totally, in many ways, very, very different. It uses the base of the story, but it doesn't actually cover the wholeness of it. And a child is murdered in that book.
Oh, no.
So it is, she doesn't only go, oh, right, well, I'm just going to handle this bit. It's the niceties of murder and it's all going to be adults and it's all going to be, this person was actually kind of nasty anyway. She does look at things like there is a child is murdered in Halloween Party. They're drowned because they witnessed or they spoke to someone who witnessed a murder.
Mm.
So they end up the next victim. And so she doesn't just go, all right, I'm going to handle everything and it's all going to be funny and funny and light and everything else. that's what I prefer. I like about the way that she writes her books, because no two of them are the same, though I did have issues with some earlier novels of hers. This one, like Murder on the Blue Train, actually. The Mystery in the Blue Train? Yeah, The Mystery of the Blue Train is kind of, I'd say, Agatha Christie light.
Mm.
And I didn't enjoy it as much as I liked this.
Okay.
That's kind of loose way of saying I liked it. I gave it 4 stars when I reviewed it.
What, this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think that the mystery was well done. Because I didn't sit there and go immediately, I know exactly who did it.
Okay. Yeah. No, whereas, I'll give you that. And yeah, no, it was. I just think it's very PG.
Yeah, but it's again, it's of its time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that
had they been massively graphic and done the Criminal Minds or Mindhunter or even NCIS thing with it, it would never have been published in 1936.
Just give the book to like John Carpenter or Rob Zombie or something, and just see Rob Zombie. It'd be interesting to see what he did with it. I know. It is of its time, and I have to accept that.
You have to accept it. Yeah. Would you ever read any more of hers, though? Knowing.
I'd listen.
You'd listen to
them. I wouldn't sit and read. I'd listen, because I'll be honest with you, I think her work is great. Because that's one thing I will say.
Yeah.
So when I was reading it, I mean, I find it comical, and I was picturing the voices, and there were certain people, you know, because you that's what happens when you read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I do. I'm like, oh, who could play this? Especially if it has never been adapted. But when I listened to it, I was like, I was almost annoyed with myself, because the journey to get down here, it took me about, 4 hours?
Yeah, about that.
And I was annoyed at myself that I didn't listen to it from when I left, because I actually wanted to listen to it more.
Yeah.
Because I found it really entertaining.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So with her stuff, not read,
mm-hmm.
listen.
Fair enough. But that's still...
Or watch. I don't know why I'm doing... listen, read, watch.
Stop right now. Thank you.
We've gone from Agatha Christie to the Spice Girls. The wine.
One simple step. We'll teach you drinking. We'll teach you how to do it at a later date. I think it's one of those books. I really do wish I could listen to audiobooks. For some reason, I don't click with them at all. However, I haven't even seen the TV version of this, which is John Malkovich. I know that they did most likely do this for the John Suchet Poirot, so I'll probably pick that up at a later date. The original, the John Malkovich one, well, not the newer one, was on...
They've changed a lot of it, because I ended up watching a little bit of that as well, and my goodness.
Yeah, that's the thing, they quite often will adapt it, and it will be based on rather than the, you know?
Oh, no, this is, I heard that someone wrote a book, and I'm going to write my own version.
That's quite often what they do. That's what they did with The Haunting in Venice.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, they've got Halloween Party, which is relatively good.
I only
good
watched
book.
A little bit because I wanted to see what Rupert Grint was like when I was like kind of picturing him.
Yeah.
But with audiobooks, I will say I can only listen to audiobooks if I'm walking or driving. I can't listen to them if I'm in the house cleaning and stuff. I can't do anything else but listen to it, because I'm doing walking, or because if I'm driving, obviously I can't.
No, you can't do anything else.
And when I'm walking,
I can't escape.
No, so it does help in that sense. But yeah, definitely listen, because they're funny. I don't know if they're meant to be, but they are. But the acting's brilliant. The acting's so good.
I think there's sometimes there is an element of humour in these books. They're not meant to be completely a person got killed. But at the same time, I think that there are elements of, especially Poirot's character, that are meant to be seen as humorous.
Yeah.
Because he is an odd, peculiar little man in many ways. He's very, very clever. That is blatantly obvious. He is meant to be supremely intelligent. And he is good at what he does. However, there are elements of him that are... unusual, like he sleeps with a mustache mask on, so his mustache is precisely how he wants it, and he is very particular about his clothing. I think he is OCD, personally, but I find him endearing because of all of those things.
Yeah,
which is why he is my favourite creation from Agatha Christie.
Well, I think if we ever do an Agatha Christie book again, I wish I had you just went straight to the audio rather than read it first.
I did wonder if you were going to do that rather than read it, because no, I know that you do prefer ordered that it. Some books.
I actually got the book and I thought...
What, the physical book?
Yeah, I've got the physical book.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, so I got that. I managed, I think it was like £3 something on Amazon. Somebody had a secondhand copy.
Yeah, you see, I bought this secondhand. This is a teeny tiny little
book. Mine's
a
different cover though.
This is the 2007 cover, and they do change them quite a lot.
I'll have a look. I'll send you a picture of mine. I think I did. But yeah, so going forward, I think if you kind of put this type of thing to me, or like your cozy crime books and stuff, I think I'd have to listen to them.
That makes sense. I mean, everybody has their different... I'd never sit there and say, oh, don't listen to that. It's not reading.
I felt more engaged. Oh, I don't listen to people that say stuff like that.
They're morons. It's banal.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I found it entertaining listening to, because they are those type of characters. They're kind of out there a bit, like, do you know what I mean?
Over the top. They're very of their time. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that you have to take away from this. The ABC Murders, and most other Agatha Christie, to be fair, is very of its time. But at the same time, she is ahead of her time when it comes to a lot of the ways that she handles certain things and describes them and explains them, because she does talk about psychological effects of murder, and she does talk about modus operandi and the psychology of a serial killer. All of those things are within her books. If you read them or listen to them, they are there. It's just that they are sort of, it's not buried exactly, but it's sort of written between the lines of the slightly unusual or peculiarity, the slightly unusual behavior or peculiarities of her main characters. And that, I mean, I think that's really what is the core of Agatha Christie's work. More than
and
anything.
The person who did it was...
Well, that's it for this week, and thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, why not share it with your friends and family? And please post a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of the other podcatchers where you might listen. You can also follow me on Instagram as Being Bookish Pod, on TikTok as Being Bookish Reviews, which I have kind of abandoned of late, and on X as Being_Bookish. And you can find newer episodes and book-themed content on YouTube, where I am at Being Bookish Pod, or Ray's Reading. Of course, you can also check out my website for full written spoiler-free book reviews at beingbookish.co.uk. Well, I have a few things left to do before I begin my next full week at work, as last week was a bank holiday, and yay, long weekends. And I'm looking forward to starting a new book, visiting a new world, and enjoying new characters. So until next time, which will be in 2 weeks, this is me saying farewell.